Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
How about this one?
Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's John. I'm in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We love being here, and we're really glad you're there. I'm here until 3.
Lord have mercy.
Saturdays, 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast. We do that, too, here at WGN Radio. Judged this year by area journalists to be the best podcast in the city of Chicago. We're kind of proud of that. We think if you want to stay up on current affairs and hear some clever people chatting about it, you'll hear Eric Zorn, Krista McQuarrie, Scott Stantis, Steve Bertrand, Patty Vasquez, Justin Kaufman, and sometimes me. That's the Mincing Rascals. Listen to podcasts. Listen to the Mincing Rascals. So want to wait. In just a minute, we expect to hear from Stacey St. Clair. She's been following the Jason Van Dyke trial here in Chicago, reporting on it on the Chicago Tribune site in print, and sometimes joining us on the radio, as well as our Eric Rung. If you're watching CLTV right now, you'll see him sitting to the left of your screen, paying close attention to what's going on, as has been Stacey St. Clair. Stacey, I know you've just stepped out of the courtroom for us. Thank you for your time. What's been happening today?
Well, today we heard from a witness named Rudy Bareilles, and he is the man who made the 911 call the night that Laquan McDonald was shot, that sort of put the chain of events in motion.
The 911 call. He's the guy that said, this is the guy stealing the radios, that sort of thing?
Right. He said, he called police and said, yeah, I'm in a truck yard, and there's a guy going through trucks trying to steal radios, and he asked for help. He'd asked Laquan, he testified, to leave three times, and he didn't, and that's when he called the police. But I should clarify that he never identified Laquan McDonald as the person in the truck yard that night. In fact, he described him as a black male about 5'5", when Laquan McDonald was 6'2". And the defense, I'm guessing on purpose, never asked him to identify a photo and say, is this the man you saw that night?
I have a question about the identity of Laquan McDonald. In the video that the defense produced and presented yesterday, mm-hmm. did they have a mm-hmm. hoodie on Laquan McDonald?
They did. They had him in a hoodie where you can see, in the actual video, you can see his hair. He's not completely covered by a hoodie, you know, as the animated video showed him. They also had him in head-to-toe black clothing, where in the actual video he has on, it is a dark hoodie, but it's, you know, blue jeans with very large, light-colored pockets on the back.
A hoodie is, I don't know, a signal to some people,
yeah,
rightly or wrongly,
and
a hoodie up on your hood, on your head, I think is, for some people, a little more threatening. That's the world we live in. So I think it's interesting that the defense put the hoodie up when, in fact, that was not the case.
Right. And, in fact, the man who created the animation yesterday testified that he typically uses sort of crash test dummy figures.
Yeah.
In the videos, but in this case, he said they asked, he never said who they were, they asked to put skin on Laquan McDonald. So as in real life, in the video, Laquan McDonald is black and Jason Van Dyke is white.
Got it. Also, about today's testimony, the gentleman that placed the 911 call, is that just to establish mm-hmm. a timeline of events? I mean, what do they have to gain by, this is the defense presenting their case, what's the purpose of even talking to this guy?
Well, he says, the man says that Laquan McDonald threatened him and actually tried to stab him with a knife after he told him to leave the truck yard, and that he was calling calling the police. And he said that he was able to, you know, he threw his phone at Laquan, and then he threw some gravel at him to get him away, and then Laquan ran away, he said. But again, he never identified him as Laquan. He was just referred to as the, quote, male black during the testimony.
And this maybe goes to something Eric Zorn wrote about in the Chicago Tribune today, and that is in Illinois, in a murder trial, you can present evidence that even the person that fired the gun wasn't aware of at the time if it speaks to the character or the behavior of the individual. Is that what's happening here?
Not with this witness. This witness actually, the law in Illinois also says that if you are fleeing after committing a forcible felony, then the police are justified in using lethal force against you. So, you know, the defense could argue that, like, hey, one of the reasons why Jason Van Dyke had the right to shoot Laquan McDonald was because Laquan McDonald had attempted to stab somebody and he was fleeing from that. The judge has already, and they argued that he had tried to enter, or he had tried to steal radios that night. So the problem is, with that argument saying that he committed a forcible felony in the truck yard, is A, no radios were found on Laquan McDonald when he died. So he did not steal anything, as far as the police have been able to prove, from the truck yard. And B, the victim in this case got on the stand but did not identify Laquan McDonald as the person who threatened him. And nobody disputed that it was, but they didn't take that extra step to, you know, prove that it was, if that makes sense.
And I guess fleeing includes walking, huh? I mean, he in the video, we do see him, in the actual video, we do see him running a little bit up the street, but clearly when he was shot,
he was walking. You're right. He does run at various times, according to the police accounts. And I think if you are told to stop and you don't stop, if a police officer tells you stop and you don't stop, I think that could be considered fleeing. And, you know, so I think that'll be a little bit up for the jury to decide. But the judge has already signaled prior to the trial even starting that he had his doubts about whether they could argue that what happened in the truck yard was a forcible felony, and it'll all depend on what instructions the jury gets.
One last question for Stacey St. Clair from the Chicago Tribune at the Jason Van Dyke trial, and that is, are they talking much about his character and past behavior? Again, I'm thinking about what Eric wrote about. I'm going to talk about that when I hang up with you, but just talk about that.
Yeah, we had two witnesses this morning that talked about two separate incidents. They both were employees of the juvenile detention center, and they both talked about incidents where they had to restrain Laquan in at the juvenile center because he didn't want to go to his pod at bedtime. And one of those incidents we've already heard about. So we've had two witnesses testify, one earlier in the week and then one today, about an April 2013 incident where he didn't want to go to his bed at 7:30. And then the second incident where he didn't want to go to bed that I learned about today. And then we've heard kind of duplicate stories from people at this point. Two stories about how on the same day he was unhappy that he was taken into juvenile custody at juvenile court. So it's a lot of the same repetition. And, you know, as one of the prosecutors said to the detention center worker today, you know, is it unusual for a 15-year-old boy at your facility to be unhappy about a 7:30 p.m. bedtime? And the woman answered, no, everyone is unhappy about the bedtime at 7:30.
This is the defense's case, so they are hoping that 5 years ago that he didn't want to go to bed at 7:30 is going to help them.
Right, and he did become violent, and he did, you know, resist being heavily restrained. So it wasn't like he just said, like, I don't want to go to bed. He did have to be restrained, but they're hoping that, you know, hearing these stories sort of builds this idea of Laquan McDonald was a violent teenager who resisted authority repeatedly.
We can read Stacey St. Clair in the Chicago Tribune online right now. She's also reporting in print, of course. She's at the courthouse. I'll let you go and call upon you another day. Thank you again, Stacey.
Anytime, John. Take care. Bye.
And nice to hear her voice. You'll see our Eric Rung reporting there, and we'll check in with him later on, too. So on we go. Week two, a testimony. Eric Zorn in the Tribune, who is one of the regulars in that Mincing Rascals podcast I was talking about. And as you know, Laquan McDonald, at age 17, 4 years ago, was shot in the street one night in Chicago as he was walking down, what was it, Pulaski. And the officers told him to stop. He did not. And while he was approaching the officers, he went from 40 feet away to 13 feet away. He kept getting closer. He also crossed a full lane of traffic away from them horizontally. Vertically, he's getting closer, if you will, but he was moving away from them. Still, he was about 13 feet away from them. He had a knife in his hand. And that's when Jason Van Dyke pulls up and 6 seconds after emptying his car, shoots him 16 times. Laquan dies, and that's what this murder trial is all about. And it's interesting that in the paper, Eric is describing something he's talked to us about before, and that is what's called lynch material. Lynch material is actually based on a case in 1984, The People versus Lynch, and it's an Illinois Supreme Court decision. In that ruling, Zorn writes, the majority held that a defendant who is claiming self-defense in a murder trial, that would be Van Dyke, is entitled to introduce evidence that the victim's aggressive and violent character of the victim's aggressive and violent character, even if the defendant was unaware of those qualities when the killing took place. And there's two, you know, real easy ways to think about this. How often during some sort of trial do we all know more than the jurors do? Because they say, well, that's not relevant to this case. What is the fact that he got violent when they told him to go to bed 5 years ago have to do with what happened on that night in October? You know, in a way, has nothing to do with it. But then you say, yeah, but I wish the jury knew that this is the kind of guy that will go off on people. He's dangerous, man. We all know that. Why can't the jury know that? That's how that thinking goes. We've all done that before, depending on how you feel about a particular case or a defendant. At the same time, you know what the flip of that is, don't you? That what does that have to do with what happened that night? He's walking away from an armed officer, and the officer shot him. So should they, you know, go down that road? And how does that affect your opinion of him in this case? John, if he was going through the trucks looking for radios, says this texter, wouldn't there be fingerprints that would place him there? The witness would know which trucks to check. John, he's running in the video, and he's got a knife, and he's wearing a hoodie, and it might be partially on his head. What are you guys talking about? When he was shot, he was walking. At another point in the video, he is running. You know, we can have a conversation about how fast he's running, but yeah, he's fleeing. He's not obeying the police, said Stacy. He does have a knife. He doesn't swing it the way the defense claims.
And the other police on the scene who had been there longer were patient waiting for a taser,
which was 45 seconds away.
But, I mean, they didn't feel any, and they'd been observing longer, and they didn't feel a sense of urgency to act.
The hoodie might have been partially on his head, so why are you guys quibbling about the fact that it was or wasn't on his head? All right, there's another view on that. My number's 312-981-7200, and that's an update on the Van Dyke trial. Hey, Matt, you're on WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. What's up?
Hey, King John. All right. The whole purpose of them putting the hoodie on the approximation of Laquan McDonald is simple. They were stereotyping him as a typical African-American stereotype where all these kids walk around with hoods and they're all dangerous. They're prejudicing the jury against the memory of Laquan McDonald, and it's sickening and it's ridiculous.
Well, I thought it was pretty heavy-handed myself. I mean, I just don't think you needed that. I just think it's so easy for the other side to pick on that. And that might work against the jury. Maybe they'll see a black man in a hoodie with the hood up, and they go, I know what that's all about, and that'll work for the defense. But maybe they'll say, really? Really? You had to put a hoodie on him and put the hood up? I mean, if you have to do that to make your case, maybe you don't have a very good case. I'm just saying it was calculated, and it might work for him, it might not.
But was he wearing a hoodie in the real video?
Was he? I think he was.
I don't. I
he
as
was.
Far as I remember, you can still see his hair. So
the hood was not up. Right, the hood was not up. Yeah.
But he was wearing a hoodie. Yeah.
He was wearing a hoodie, but the hood was not up.
Come on, I'm wearing a hoodie. Right now, I'm wearing a hoodie.
Yeah, you're not a young black man. Okay.
Anyway, thanks, John. I appreciate the phone call.
I'm glad you called in. John, he's running 2 seconds before he gets shot. Give me a break. You make it sound like he's out for an evening stroll. That from 847 and from 773. Just because he has a history of bad behavior, should he be shot 16 times? If that is the case, then we should line up a lot of men and women who break the law and shoot them versus due process in jail, says another texter.
I just want to add that I'm looking at pictures online from the video because I couldn't remember, and you can't tell.
Well, that's it. I remember he had a dark, long sleeve garment on, and the hood's not up, so it's hard to tell if it's a hoodie or not. But he's not wearing the top of the hood. I don't know. Does this matter, or is this completely ridiculous? But they had the hood up in the video. In the animation.
Yeah.
By the way, let's do the news click real quick. It's not about this. Yesterday we asked you, and it had more to do with the Kavanaugh story. In fact, it was explicitly about that. We were asking you if you've been embarrassed by or think you might be about the contents in your yearbook. 88% of you said no, and 12% of you said yes. Today's question, Producer Elif, what's the news click today, please?
How well do you think Bears quarterback Mitch Trubisky is doing? A, I think he's doing a fine job. B, I think he will do a fine job. C, I don't think he will do a fine job.
Uh-huh. Where are you going to be on the news click today, Steve? Mitch Trubisky, you still got hope for him?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Three games. 4 teams that's in first place. I know he's missed some open receivers and so forth, but 3 games, right? I'm going to repeat it again, Your Honor. 3 games. Steve, how many games has Trubisky played for the Bears this season?
3 games so far, John.
I submit that he has played only 3 games, Your Honor. Now, how can we convict this man after just 3 games?
Any Bears fan who is ever in a state of satisfaction or happiness with his or her team, well, they should be institutionalized.
Because they're not a real Bears fan.
Yeah, they don't fit the mold.
we wouldn't know what to do with a first-place team. If one bit us in the shoulder pads.
Well, we have one, don't we?
Yeah. I think he's doing a fine job. I think he... Well, the correct answer is I think he will do a fine job. I'm sure that's going to get 97% of the vote. Well, I don't know. Maybe some people think he won't. He doesn't measure up. They're saying we need to be patient with him. And I'm thinking, that's not so crazy. Is it so crazy to think, all right, let's give this young man, 8, 12, 100 more games?
Maybe not 100.
The texters include these. Perhaps you should not have been shot 16 times, but is this first-degree murder by somebody who might have thought he was doing his job as a police officer? That's what makes it so complicated and just doubly tragic, right? Laquan shouldn't have been shot. And here's another guy who, you know, today would be doing his job for the people of Chicago, but for that mistake he made. I think we all are forming opinions about the guilt or innocence of Jason Van Dyke. At the same time, I don't wish him any ill. I didn't know him beforehand, and I'm on the side of the police officers. But that evidence sure looks bad. John, look at the effects PCP has on superhuman abilities. People on PCP have been known to keep walking and attacking after being shot. The police were justified, says 708. They did not know he was on PCP at the time.
They did know he was on the ground.
Phil Vitale's on the phone line from the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good.
You're good.
I'm geeked up about this.
Yeah, you are geeked up. I really don't care as much as you do. I'm not a restaurant critic, but
right.
You make me care, Phil. So how did Chicago do this year in the Michelin Guide?
They didn't do great. They did okay. Nobody lost a star except for the restaurants that that closed, of course, and there were 4 of those. But with the exception of, there's only one new name on the whole list. which slightly disappointed me, and there were no promotions, no 2-star restaurant got that elusive 3rd star, and no 1-star restaurant was promoted to the 2-star level.
Who's the new one?
The new one is Temperance, which is in in Noble Square. It's a very intimate, very high-end, 20-seat creative restaurant by two very young chefs who used to work at Le Nomade. And last year I predicted they would get a star, and they did not. So I'm glad to see snub has been rectified this year.
Any restaurants conspicuous by their absence? Who should have gotten a star?
Belmore absolutely should have gotten a star this year. Between Belmore and Sky, which is that very cool Asian-inflected restaurant in Pilsen, both of those are the two best restaurants to open in the last year in Chicago, along with Pacific Standard Time. I had thought Pacific Standard Time at one point would get a star, but then the Bib Gourmand Awards came out last week, which is Michelin's sort of second-tier award for good restaurants that are affordable, and Pacific Standard Time was curiously included there. So that meant we knew right away they weren't going to get a star because you can't do both.
So what about where did Publican figure in that then?
Publican to me there is precedent for Michelin to take a Bib Gourmand restaurant and elevate it to a full star. It's done it several times in Chicago. The last one was Mexique, the late restaurant in Westtown. In any case, I thought Publican's absence on the Bib Gourmand this year could only mean that they were getting a star this year, because there'd be no reason to knock them off the Bib Gourmand list. They're certainly a very good restaurant. So I thought for sure this meant they were getting a promotion, and no, they were just completely skunked. No longer a Bib Gourmand recipient, and they didn't get any stars.
Any other restaurants you want to mention here as we talk about what Michelin did?
Yeah, I'm glad for the restaurants that got in. I don't want to leave them out of this. Alinea has, for the ninth straight year, received the maximum three stars. The two-star restaurants from last year, Acadia, Oriole, and Smith, both remain at the two-star level, and two-star is very significant with Michelin. I had predicted a few days ago that Smith might get that third star. Didn't happen, but they still got two, so that may happen another day. Two restaurants dropped out of the one-star level. One restaurant replaced them, so we have one fewer starred restaurant in Chicago than three than we would have had a year ago. So in that respect, it's a little bit of a down year. But the ones that lost a star are the ones that either closed or severely reconcepted, say Terra 16. They had two stars. I knew there wasn't a doubt in my mind that they were going to lose that two-star rating, seeing as they closed for a little bit and then came back with a much more casual approach and concept.
That's the one at Trump Tower, right?
Right, exactly, and I knew that the change to going more casual was going to cost them, because the two star levels there's just no casual going on there.
Yeah, yeah. So then I'm confused now, Phil. So what's our total? If you add the three stars, two stars, and one star, how many restaurants have been recognized this year by Michelin?
22. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, three plus 18
one star. Three two stars, so that's 21, and one restaurant with three stars, that's 22. There were 22. And referring to that Bib Gourmand rating that came out last week, 58 Chicago restaurants received a Bib Gourmand.
And so, and that's a claim, but for more moderately priced restaurants?
Exactly. You have to be able to have an average price for $25 or less. $40 or less for a meal for one.
Huh.
That's their ceiling.
You know,
this is all going to appear in the Michelin Guide, which is their full book, and that book contains many more restaurants that are simply mentioned as, yes, this exists. They don't have a star, they don't have a bib, but they're still in the book. So the restaurants that I consider to have been snubbed are no doubt going to be in the book anyway.
Yeah, right.
They just won't have a star next to their name.
Well, I've not paid attention to Bib Gourmand before, but I think that would be, I'm not going to go to some of these three and two and even one star restaurants, not much. But
no,
those other ones I might check out, right?
It's a very useful list. It's a very useful list.
And do I just go to the Michelin site then and look for the Bib Gourmand list instead of the Michelin star list?
You could. Yeah. You could also, in a pinch, go to chicagotribune.com/dining, and I've got my story on the Bib winners, and I've got already up online right now. I have listed all of the Michelin star recipients that went up about a half hour ago.
That's good to hear.
In one-stop shop, you can do it there. You can go on the Michelin site. You can, by within a few minutes, you'll probably go on and on several sites and be able to find this information.
That's really helpful. Hey, Phil, well, I know you're over there working and writing. I appreciate you picking up the phone. Come by our studio sometime next week, okay?
I will. It's much more fun in person.
Well, it's good on the phone, too. Thank you, my friend.
Okay, thank you.
Phil Vitale writes about the restaurant scene for the Chicago Tribune. I didn't even get a chance to ask him what he thinks about Dunkin' Donuts dropping the word donuts from its brand name. I think that was a huge mistake. 60% of the sales at Dunkin' Donuts are beverages, and most of that is coffee. And there are some people who will not start their day without coffee from Dunkin' Donuts. So they got that going for them.
America runs on Dunkin'.
See, that's all good, but I mean, when I think of Dunkin' Donuts, I think of the coffee and I think of the donuts. Is donuts such a bad word now, right?
Yes.
Really? I mean, I know you're not supposed to eat a lot of donuts, but people like donuts. Come on.
Plus, they go good with coffee.
It's like Ben and Jerry's ice cream, or I don't know, what Dairy Queen ice cream. I don't know, I'm trying to think. None of those use ice cream in their names,
Kentucky
do they?
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
KFC. Is the name of the company now. It's not Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Well, they got rid of fried.
They got rid of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Well, they got rid of fried is what they wanted to get rid of, I think.
Yeah, but the name of the company is KFC.
I know. They were going to be Kentucky F Chicken, so well, they had to get rid of all of them.
Well, what does the C stand for in KFC?
Well, it stands, but the F.
And what is the F? Yeah, pardon me, the F. What's the F all about?
Friendly.
Flavorful.
That's what they should have come out with. Kentucky's Flavorful Chicken. I mean, when they hold it up on TV, how do you think it got that crust? That golden, delicious brown crust.
Roasted.
Oh, I love me some KFC.
The biscuits.
You know, my dream dinner is KFC and their coleslaw. Maybe some of them smushed potatoes with that gravy. I'm not even sure if any of that's organic. It's just some stuff they came up with.
Not sure if it's even potato.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It doesn't have to be. I don't care if that came out of a well, you know, some sort of petroleum product, whatever it is. It's just good to eat. And the original crust. It's about lunchtime. I'm past lunchtime. That sounds good right now. Future Farmers of America is now FFA. It's not Future Farmers of America because they wanted it to be more business, more educational. So it's not, if I'm not mistaken on that, IHOP dallied with changing IHOP to IHOB as in burger, but then they went back to IHOP as I understand it.
Yeah, because it was plain dumb.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, hey, if you're the International House of Pancakes, and you go, yeah, well, pancakes aren't good for you. No, we know they're not good for you. That's why we go there. It's like Dunkin' Donuts. Why do you go to Dunkin' Donuts? Because you want coffee and some donuts. If you ask every single person in line at Dunkin' Donuts, hey, are donuts good for you? They go, no.
I don't ever get donuts at Dunkin' Donuts.
I do. I get them every Saturday. Every Saturday.
Really?
Yeah. Buy about six of them. I get two maple glaze. Domati likes the maple glaze. Bob Ferguson likes a maple glaze. Lindsay, who produces Lou Manfredini's show, will eat a glazed donut on occasion, though she's passed lately.
Everybody knows it's the chocolate sprinkle, people.
Maybe it's time you started bringing low-fat wraps from the breakfast.
That's what I'm going to do. I'll just bring maybe a bag of corn.
No, spinach wrap.
Kale. The thing is, Dunkin's always had like an issue because they also had the Baskin-Robbins, and then people called it 31 flavors. And I don't know. It's like ice cream, coffee, donuts. Pick a thing.
Well, Dunkin' Donuts has worked for me. I wouldn't have changed the name. Boy, they didn't ask me that. John in Wisconsin, they have a KFC buffet. I take an aspirin before I sit down to eat there.
Maybe a gas X, too.
John, Kentucky Fried Chicken renamed themselves KFC a long time ago because fried is bad. I know, but it's still good. Okay, Teddy Roosevelt's going to come to town in November, the Saturday after the election, 10:30 in the morning at the Elgin Community College. We'll be at the Blizzard Theater just for one show. This great president comes right off of Mount Rushmore. He and I walk onto stage. I talk to Teddy Roosevelt, you will believe, for about 45 minutes. Then you get to ask him questions as well. Teddy Roosevelt is about character. He is about courage. He's a brilliant academic. He's a cowboy. He is a true American leader. When he was on stage with us not that long ago, he said something like this.
Swift and armor and big steel and big oil are never going to do this for their workers. If there were no government of the United States, there wouldn't be a single redwood tree left in the world. Do you understand this? We need government. Capitalism is a great system. I love wealth and I like wealthy people. Capitalists, these captains of industry, are the engines of prosperity. They take risks on behalf of the country and they build jobs and they create an engine of prosperity and material happiness. Nobody should ever attack the capitalists, but they don't do very well on treating the planet nicely or their workers nicely. And if you say, oh, please do it, they make promises of the wildest sort and they break them because they want profits. And so government must say, look, we're not going to prevent you from doing what you do, but by Godfrey, you're going to do it with a square deal for the little man.
Not many people like that these days, right? A champion for the captains of industry, a real capitalist, but also a champion for the little guy who deserves a square deal. You want to know where it came from? There that is. You've heard the expression, good to the last drop when they sell coffee. That was from Teddy Roosevelt. He drank a big cup of coffee once, set it down, and said, that was good to the last drop, and it stuck. That's Teddy Roosevelt. How can you get tickets to see a show like that? Do come. This is really fun. Go to WGNradio.com/events, WGNradio.com/events. We are selling tickets now.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Better believe it.
Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's John. We are in the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago.
Lord have mercy.
This time yesterday, it was starting to get dark and rainy, and then that wind came through. Hokey smoke. Better day today. Clouding up downtown, but you'll take this, won't you? So we're here in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast. Wherever you subscribe to find a podcast, this one's free. It's called The Mincing Rascals. We talk about things in Chicago and in the news across the country. You know what that means. And also remember that on social media, I'm WGN King John.
What are we going to do tomorrow?
I think tomorrow is one of those days where you either need to completely shut off all media or immerse yourself completely in it.
I was talking about the Mincing Rascals because we recorded at 11, yeah. 10.
Yeah. And by noon, it's going to be a different world. Rosenstein will have met. You will have had the testimony that will be ongoing in the Kavanaugh case. To say nothing of the Van Dyke trial, which continues by the minute. By the time we get done recording it, it'll be completely dated.
So listen anyway, because it'll be entertaining.
Yeah. Now, tomorrow's going to be one of those days. I had to laugh. Give Fox News credit on Rod Rosenstein. Remember Rod Rosenstein? That was all the news for about a minute, and then that got buried. But he has a meeting with the president. I think that's scheduled for tomorrow. It'd be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah.
Is he going to quit? Is he going to be fired? Is it going to be neither? The consequences of that are enormous. That really is predictably the big story tomorrow. No, it's the Kavanaugh hearing. You've got them both. Anyway, in Fox News, the headline was, when we first thought that Rod Rosenstein had quit or had been fired, the headline was, it's curtains, Rod. Now, how great is that? You didn't think Fox News had it in them. It's curtains, Rod.
Not bad.
I laughed and laughed. High five, Fox News. We were talking moments ago about Dunkin' Donuts, changing the name to just Dunkin'.
Donuts.
I know. That's. I had to pause because if they said, John, what are you going to be? I go, oh, that's easy, donuts. And what do you do when you go to the donut shop? You get coffee. Nobody's saying they're not going to serve coffee. The fact that they love coffee and they want to be healthier and quicker, right.
I think they should add the N, the G, though. I think it should be dunking now.
I know.
I mean, just realized it's dunking the donuts in coffee.
Okay, thanks, Violetta.
Oh, V, that's you didn't need to share with the whole class.
I thought they just...
What did you think Dunkin' Donuts was?
Finish the sentence, please.
I don't know. I just thought they picked a D word to go with Dunkin'. I mean, with donut. Oh, never mind.
Could you copyright the word donuts? I think that would be hard to do.
Well, but they spell it wrong, so...
Well, I think they copyright Dunkin'.
Do they?
I think they own that. I don't see the little R by it, but my guess is Dunkin' is more copyrightable in this case than donuts.
Yeah, I think so, too. But, I don't know, is donuts spelled D-O-N or D-O-U-G-H?
D-O-N.
No.
That's what I thought.
No, it's not.
Well, in this case, it is.
Yeah, this is do-nuts.
You know we're on the air, right?
Right. So all of a sudden, the authority on Dunkin' Donuts is telling us how to spell it.
John, Dunkin' workers are so nice. Also, the Boston people have bigger donuts with an emoticon of a donut. John, YMCA and VFW, speaking of name changes, a lot of people don't even know what those letters stand for. YMCA is, I think, Young Men Christians Athletic. Or athletics?
Association, Young Men Christians Association.
Association?
I think.
And VFW is Veterans Foreign Wars, of course. Hey, John, this one says, try to find Jim Gaffigan's bit about Dunkin' Donuts teaming up with Baskin-Robbins. It's hilarious.
There's always that travel pressure, you know, the eating travel pressure. You know, it's like, oh, you're going to Austin, you got to get barbecue. Got to get barbecue in Austin. Every city, you know, has a food they're famous for. It's almost like there was a meeting. Okay, Chicago, what do you pick? Deep dish pizza. Okay, Philadelphia cheesesteak. Okay, Boston beans. New England loves their Dunkin' Donuts. I like Dunkin' Donuts, but have you been to a Dunkin' Donuts that doesn't have a homeless guy standing in front? Is that part of the design plans? There'll be an entrance here, a deranged lunatic here. There's always a guy standing out there like they're Ronald McDonald. Dunkin' Donuts. It's an interesting concept, really. It's almost as if AA opened their own restaurant. What should we have? Coffee? Donuts? Maybe a little honesty? Hi, my name's Jim. I haven't had a donut in 30 seconds. I don't know how Dunkin' Donuts even stays in business. They sell 3,000 donuts. What do they make, $30? Whenever I go in there, it seems like they're trying to get rid of the donuts. They're like, yeah, I'll have 6 donuts. That'll be $3, but if you get a dozen, it's a nickel. How much are 2 dozen? We give you $10. They're either trying to get rid of them or trying to get us addicted. You ever buy a couple of donuts, you open it up, and there's some free munchkins in there? Those are the gateway donut. First time's always free. Now at some locations, they have Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins in the same building. It's like a marriage made in obesity. Finally, Dunkin' Donuts is offering something for dessert. Donuts and ice cream. It's like 2 pairs of dirty underwear.
Thank you for the heads up on Jim Gaffigan talking about Dunkin' Donuts marrying Baskin-Robbins. We continue to plow through the news that they are getting rid of the word donuts. They're keeping Dunkin'. Markets are just slightly down now, but the markets are up 27 points. Steve was talking about that earlier.
Yeah, they're off their high for the day, but they're still in positive territory.
Tell you what, I'm going to call that guy Bob Westrick, who has visited with us in the past about the economy and the markets. He is one of the principal partners over at Private Vista, and he'll join us after 2:30 just to talk about what's going on. But the S&P is up. You know, everything has just been doing so well lately. As much anxiety as we have in this country, and as problematic, maybe, as the president's proclamations are about trade, the market just keeps going up. Don't you wish you got in 2008? Don't you wish you had some money in 2008? Don't you wish you could have put it in there instead of, you know, worrying about your upside-down house? We have a news click at WGNradio.com. It's a daily web poll question. It's not about any of that, though. Producer Elif, can you give us the news click for today, too? Here's where we are when we ask you at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page a question about something in the news.
How well do you think Bears quarterback Mitch Trubisky is doing? A. I think he's doing a fine job. B. I think he will do a fine job. C. I don't think he will do a fine job.
I see Kevin Powell's over in the sports box right now. I don't know that he's listening to us currently. Later on, I'll ask Kevin what he thinks about the news click. But I think the middle answer is the best one. I think he will do a fine job. We spoke a lot in the first hour of the show today about the Jason Van Dyke trial, which is going on. That thing just plows along at a snail's pace. You know, there's a guy who said that he saw what he believes was Laquan McDonald try to steal some radios. Could he identify him for sure? His description is different. When did he make the call? Did he see him? Did he not see him? This was before then he went on that walk down the street and eventually got shot by Jason Van Dyke. So he's up there with an interpreter going back and forth about stuff that I'm just amazed. They are so begging the jury's patience in this thing. Now, both the prosecution and the defense. The state went on for 2 days about the trajectory of the bullets. I didn't anticipate that. And then the defense took a lot of time to describe the bullets. Then there was that somewhat controversial video from yesterday, the animation that the defense produced to show what it was like. And to be honest with you, I didn't think that that helped the defense that much. It very much mirrored the video which you saw from a different angle, but boy, it sure did show him some distance from Officer Van Dyke, and you saw him spin helplessly to the ground. They only showed 5 bullets shot. They put a hood on top of him where one was not. There are some discrepancies, which only begs the question, well, then how honest is this video? So did it help him or not? You know, I was watching Channel 9, CLTV, and others, and they've all got experts on, right? And the experts are saying, well, it helped the defense a little bit. It helped the state a little bit. So maybe it did. But if you ask me, I was not so persuaded. The texts about the Van Dyke trial have been interesting. Somebody said, John, thanks, Steve Bertrand. Please keep making those short yet poignant comments to keep this McDonald discussion in the right light. John, how do you have any order in this country, says 269, when everyone has the idea they do not need to listen to the police? They are the law. Follow the laws and you will be fine. 708 said, my 37-year-old professional son wears a hoodie and a backwards baseball cap at times. Do not judge a book by its cover. Please do not use McDonald's past history and troubles as justification for the atrocious criminal behavior of a police officer. 773 said, John, Officer Van Dyke cost taxpayers millions. And 708 says, John, he was being spiteful. When a cop says stop, you stop. One more, 630, John, he probably would not have seen his 20th birthday anyway. It's actually a favor to society in an odd kind of way, says somebody listening to this radio station today. How about that? We're also following, of course, the Brett Kavanaugh story. So as I understand it, here's just a little primer on where we are on this. We have Christine Blasey Ford. There's a sworn declaration from her husband saying that she told him about what Brett Kavanaugh did long before he was nominated for the Supreme Court. And she now has 3 other friends who have sworn declarations saying she told them about being attacked by Kavanaugh. Her family has avoided the press. Have you noticed? Her father said, and listen to the way he put it, I think all of the Blaseys would support her. And I think any father would have love for his daughter. Ford's parents are registered Republicans. Her father was, in 2004 and 2006, the president of the Columbia Country Golf Club, which has been criticized in the past for its exclusion of women, according to the Washington Post. We have Deborah Ramirez, who now claims that while at Yale, he exposed himself and pushed his genitals into her face at a drunken party during the 1983-84 year. A third woman, Julie Swetnick, has come forward. She says that she attended well over 10 parties where Kavanaugh was present and saw him drink excessively at many of these parties and engage in abusive and physically aggressive behavior towards the girls, including pressing girls against him without their consent, grinding against them, and attempting to remove some of their clothing. Swetnick made her allegations in a sworn statement that was given to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Her statement includes a series of other serious allegations that CNN, in their reporting, said they cannot yet corroborate. The Chicago Tribune has reprinted some of those, though, and it is this Swetnick that says the girls were fed alcohol to excess and then gang raped. The Tribune reports that she says Kavanaugh was there when she was sexually assaulted, but does not say that he participated in her assault. Mark Judge is the friend of Brett Kavanaugh, who wrote Wasted, Tales of a Gen X Drunk. In this no longer in print book, Judge writes, and he's the other young man that Blasey Ford says was in the room the night that Brett Kavanaugh tried to force himself upon her. So he is the friend that wrote this book called Wasted. In this no longer in print book, Judge writes that faced with the realization that their Sundays of their senior year were to be dedicated to community service projects, they decided to drink 100 kegs and then brag about it. You wonder what the 100 kegs and the 100 keg club are all about. That's it. The book is about what happened during that quest to drink 100 kegs before they graduated. Judge describes talking to a young woman at a party. Do you know Bart O'Kavanaugh? I heard he puked in someone's car the other night. Yes, comes the response. He passed out on his way back from a party. Kavanaugh is, of course, denying all of this. He told Fox News that it didn't happen. In his senior yearbook, under activities, he lists football, captain of the basketball team, track, and then some things we do and don't understand or can speculate on, right? Land and rocks and bowling alley assault. Don't know what that is. After listing the Georgetown versus Louisville game, he writes, who won that game anyway? He lists himself as the treasurer of the Keg City Club. There's a reference to the Beach Week Ralph Club, and he IDs himself as the biggest contributor to whatever that was. He says he survived the FFFFF 4th of July, which, according to Michael Avenetti and the Urban Dictionary, is a reference to a number of sex acts. And he says he is a Renate alumnus, which refers to a female named Renate. Senator Chuck Grassley is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he's confirmed that Rachel Mitchell, a deputy county attorney in Arizona, is going to come on as outside counsel. She is going to do the bulk of the questioning for the Republicans. The Democrats can ask the questions they want, but all of the Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee are men, and she will do the questioning of both Kavanaugh and Ford for them. They will not ask questions. I think that is cowardice. I am not amazed, but I am saddened by that. I don't know how they're supposed to question this lady, but I think that's the responsibility of a senator. You are the people that advise the president. It's your job to ask the questions and figure it out. But they've got a woman to come on as cover and ask the questions for them. The New York Times editorial today has a list of questions they say he needs to answer, and they refer to some of the things I've just mentioned, and some of them you don't even want to read about.
It would be so awkward for the senators to, I mean, I understand that it's politically expedient for them to do that. And there are times when staff interviews, I remember some of the Clinton impeachment hearings that I think there was a staff attorney who did a lot of the questioning. So I don't think that, I mean, I understand the point of it all. And it's trying to save very unpleasant scenarios for them. But I think they're getting beaten up a little too much on that.
Do you think it would be wise if they didn't televise it?
No.
Really? You think? Well, I mean, well, really, I'm. This whole thing is a spectacle.
No.
I am not looking forward to watching tomorrow. I'm already cringing at the notion.
Can I go back to the yearbook stuff?
Yeah.
Because as I understand that, all of those things you read were printed by the yearbook.
That's stunning to me.
I mean, I just can't believe. I hope high schools don't do that still. But you could fill out whatever you wanted. So they had all these sort of references to what appear to be lewd or illegal activities that were printed by the yearbook.
The drinking age then was 18, so maybe they were 18, maybe they were not, but some of it is, your point's well taken. When I first heard about these items, I thought they were written in by, you know, when you sign a yearbook,
right,
and you go, remember the 100 keg thing?
Right.
What was the staff, administration, or parents thinking when they saw those printed in the yearbooks?
Because they had to see them and know they weren't supposed to know what they meant.
They did not ask Kavanaugh on the Fox interview, what is the FFFFF 4th of July? What does that mean? I would have loved to have heard his response to that. All right. Among the texts, hey, John, this one says, wise up. I don't blame a woman going to be getting a woman to question so their questions don't get twisted by the media and the Democrats to express just the opposite of what they said. Some of you are saying things like this. For instance, John, this is politically motivated. It is so clear. I'm surprised I thought you had higher journalistic ethics. You know, I think it's both. I think that what these women are saying may well be true. I mean, there just seems to me to be a string of truth to all of this. Is it politically being used by the Democrats? If by that do you mean, are they using this to keep Kavanaugh from bringing a Supreme Court justice? Of course they are. Of course they are. I mean, maybe their motives are pure. Maybe they want to do right by these ladies, but they've got an agenda and they're using this. Of course they are. Are you kidding me? That's what this is. But that doesn't take away from the possible truth of it, too. I still think there's no great injustice if Brett Kavanaugh does not become a Supreme Court justice. Another conservative will be. So one guy whose behavior we don't know won't be on the Supreme Court. That's okay. There's 330 million of us. We'll get another conservative, smart, Ivy League attorney, judge. We'll find another one. I mean, there was 50 people on the list that were given to the president. Vet it all. I mean, pick one of those. You don't have to have Brett Kavanaugh. You can still have a fine Supreme Court. Says me. And then questions like this from 815. So if these women were at 10 keg parties, don't they think that they were drinking as well? Don't you think that their judgment was impaired? Were they totally innocent, John? Don't you think that they were looking to have sex with men, maybe touching without permission? Just questions to ponder, says 815. So that's the kind of stuff that is being texted in here at WGN. It's 241. I'm looking at the markets now. And the Dow, what did you say it is at, Steve? The Dow
just slipped into negative territory.
Down 18 points now.
20 or so.
26,000 just rolled away from my eyeballs. But I just thought, you know, good Lord, if when you read the news and you have the anxiety that we all have these days and you look at the Dow and it's at 26.4, at least we got that going for us, right? Bob Westrick is that guy we talk to over at Private Vista now and again. He joins us on WGN. Hey, Bob Westrick, how are you?
I'm doing well, John. How are you doing?
Pretty good. What's your title over at Private Vista, Bob?
I'm one of several partners over here.
So what's your take about how the markets are doing? The S&P, the Dow, they're all up, you know, maybe down a little bit today, but they continue to do well despite the things the president is saying about China and trade. What's your take about all of this?
Well, you know, so far what's been said about trade hasn't really affected trade that much. I mean, some tariffs just recently went into effect, you know, a small sliver of it. But, you know, if you look at the macroeconomy, things are pretty darn strong. I mean, unemployment is as low as it's been since I can remember. You know, business and consumer spending are both very, very high. Interest rates are still low, even though the Fed raised rates, you know, today for the third time this year. They're still on a historical basis. They're still low. Basically, our economy is hitting on all cylinders right now.
So is it kind of devoid of politics, Bob? I mean, if a different Republican were in the White House, let's not even talk about whether or not Hillary Clinton were there or some Democrat. But, I mean, this isn't about policy so much as it's just about the fundamentals of these companies or not. Talk about that.
Well, it's, you know, John, there's never one reason for anything. It's a number of reasons. Policy is definitely part of it. I mean, but, you know, Trump, like him or don't like him as a president or as a human being, basically he's pro-business and anti-regulation. And a lot of his policies are certainly good for business. We've had a huge, you know, corporate and personal, you know, tax reductions. That's good for business. So there's, you know, a lot of things that he has done he has purported to do certainly helped the economy.
And, you know, I'm trying not to talk about Donald Trump here, but I'm going to ask you another question about that. I thought, though, that when he says, okay, another $200 billion in tariffs against China, and then they say, okay, fine, whiskey and baseball gloves are going to cost more because we're going to put tariffs on your products. So you, it just seemed like at some point the cost for us consumers would go up. And I don't know that that would have some sort of negative repercussions, if not in the markets, then in something. You know what I mean? But I don't seem to be feeling any of that.
Well, we haven't felt it, John. I mean, long term, it absolutely will. I mean, tariffs are inflationary because, you know, companies will have to, you know, pay the tariff, and they're just going to pass it on to you and me. So it will be inflationary.
Will that hurt the markets, you know, then, Bob? So when did I see the value of companies go down as a result?
Yes, it will. I mean, because once again, the Fed is targeting inflation two and a quarter, and inflation stays there, then they can just raise rates, you know, gradually, slowly, in a very controlled nature that hopefully won't impact the economy that dramatically. But if all of a sudden all these tariffs get imposed, boom, all these costs get pushed on consumers, and now the rate of inflation starts to get pushed higher and higher and higher, well, the Fed, instead of saying, okay, maybe we're going to just do one more rate hike this year and three next year, maybe they do one, you know, this year, four more next year, and maybe instead of a quarter rate, it's got to go up a half. And, you know, when the Fed raises rates, cost of borrowing for both businesses and consumers go up, the cost of mortgages goes up, which is going to slow housing.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot of repercussions, but the bottom line is I think a lot of people are just skeptical that this trade war is really going to hit all cylinders, that a lot of what Trump is doing is his normal, you know, kind of blustery, you know, sort of self, and that eventually, you know, before all the tariffs take effect, that things will, you know, write themselves out. I think that's what the markets are thinking.
Oh, no kidding. Right. Because I thought, okay, if baseball gloves cost more, I went through the list. It's many pages long. And a lot of it is arcane stuff you can't understand. Seal 0.25 lubricant industrial. That's one of the things on the list. But baseball gloves are on there, too. And the idea is that if baseball gloves become more expensive, then maybe I'm not going to afford a new baseball glove for my kid this year. And then that hurts those companies that sell baseball gloves, like Rawlings, that might have them made in China. So that's the repercussion, but it really hasn't trickled down that far yet. And you think the markets are actually betting that it's not going to go crazy, that we're not going to get beat up on prices that much, huh?
I do believe that, John. And also, I mean, there's a kind of political aspect to this, is that, you know, we just hear it pounded, trade war. Our economy is $19 trillion. And right now we're talking about tariffs on, you know, hundreds of billions, which is, you know, it's not nothing. But relative to the size of our economy, you know, it might take, gosh, you know, it could take 0.5% off GDP, you know, long term, if these things start getting out of control, maybe 3/4, which is not good, but it's certainly not, you know, devastating.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what I hear you saying. And then just one more thing, Bob. So the Fed had this announcement today. I don't even know what that means. And interest rates, what did you say, are going to go up a little bit? Is that right?
So, well, today they raised the Fed funds rate to between 2 and 2.25%.
So what does that do
to the third Fed hike? Huh?
So what does that do to credit card rates, or what does that do if I'm going to borrow money to buy a home?
Well, generally, it will increase it. All that stuff, you know, if you want to borrow money for a car, credit card rates will probably go up a bit. You know, your 15 and 30 year mortgages will creep up a bit. A 30 year mortgage I looked at this morning, and they're starting to push close to 5%.
Right.
You know, and we remember just a few years ago, you know, I saw 30 years at, you know, 3.25.
Right, but I also remember them when they were 11, right? I mean,
sure.
David Hochberg was in here the other day, and he was saying, you know, we're on our way to 5, And I, you know, my attitude was kind of, so is the difference when I'm borrowing $200,000 that big between 4.75 and 5 or 4.5 and 4.75 on a monthly mortgage payment? Maybe so, Bob. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, some perspective on that.
Right. I mean, it's just a matter. A lot of it, John, is relative, not absolute. My first mortgage was 10%. And I remember when I locked 10%, I was high-fiving people because I got a 10% mortgage and it had been higher, you know. So, but nowadays, when people see that they could have gotten a 30-year a few years ago for, you know, 3.25, whatever that was, and now it's 5, well, they start thinking, oh, maybe I should rent a little bit, you know, longer, or maybe I can't afford that house, you know, so I'll buy a cheaper house. And so there's downward pressure then in the housing market, which is rarely a good thing. You know, it's put it this way. Overall, it's just not a good thing when overall interest rates go up, and it starts with the Fed raising rates.
So then, but one last thing about that, Bob. So, I mean, relative to all of this, do you think the interest rates are going to stay at 5%, say, on that mortgage? And if I was thinking in the next 24 months or 12 months, I might want to buy a house, would a safe bet be now because interest rates aren't going to go down much more from this?
I think that's a safe bet. I think mortgage rates are only headed up over the next, call it, year and a half from where they are now. And that's just because, you know, everyone expects the Fed to raise again, you know, one more time this year, and common wisdom is three more times next year and maybe another time in 2019. And as they raise rates, mortgage rates will continue to rise too.
Couple of texts. Hey, John, here's a question I never heard asked or answered. Where does the tariff money go? Please tell me Trump has no control over it. That's interesting. I suppose it just goes to the U.S. Treasury, huh? Somehow, that if we are taxing imports coming into this country, I don't know where that money goes offhand. Do you, Bob, off the top of your head?
Well, that's a very good question. I can't say that I know. However, if everything I understand is that tariffs get passed through to consumers, I would have to assume that the company that's doing the importing would have to pay the tariff, or else so they can pass it on to the consumer.
Yeah, right. I get that. 708, John, I sell lighting for homes. We have already received increases notices of 10% with promises of increases up to 25% in the coming year. Assuming that's about tariffs, that's maybe that wave coming that we haven't really felt yet on the consumer end. But this is somebody saying he sells lighting fixtures, and they are going to have to start paying more for the stuff because of some tariffs, Bob.
Yeah,
that's the way it goes. Okay.
That's the way it goes.
How do people reach you, Bob? Is it myprivatevista.com?
That would be our website, right.
Yeah. And one last question.
They could also, go ahead.
Go ahead, Bob. One last thing from you.
I'd say if they would like to call us, too, they can at 630-455-0600 anytime, too.
Okay. And then one last thing. The Cubs are going to be in the playoffs, right? Are you pretty confident about that?
Oh, John. I was confident last week. They'll be in the playoffs. I mean, worst case, they'll be wild card. I mean, worst case. But they're not exactly peaking right now at the end of the season like you'd like to see a team doing going to the playoffs.
No, that's the thing. It almost matters not how you get there. It's just how are you doing when you do. And I don't like the way this team's playing right now. Do you?
I don't either. No. I don't either.
No.
I don't either. We'll see what happens tonight.
Okay, buddy boy. I'll talk to you later. Thanks for your time, Bob.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Bob Restrick, he's one of the principal partners over at Private Vista. Their website is myprivatevista.com. Right now, let's say hi to Rokan, Anna DeVlantis. Hi, guys. What's up?
Hello, John.
What's first
hi,
out of
John.
The...
John.
Hello there, Anna. What are you guys going to do first and
first
foremost?
First out of the box today. We have a lot. And if you think we have a lot today, wait till tomorrow. It's really going to be something. Right out of the box, we'll talk to Eric Rung and Mike Monaco. We'll talk about what happened in the Jason Van Dyke trial today. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of important stuff happened today. Yeah. We're getting near the end there. Tom Skilling will be here in 3 o'clock hour. And then we're going to take you live to the Trump press conference at 4 o'clock. Because
his first solo press conference in several hundred days.
Really? He's going to field questions just without President of Poland standing there?
Yeah, right. And is that all going to be from Action News or whatever the name of that? There's like some news organization that he's now trying to put on the map.
I don't know about them.
Yeah, it's America. It's One America News.
Okay,
OAN.
Yeah.
OAN. So there is there's going to be something. It's going to be there's going to be some things here. John, I think he wants to tune for this. That's all I'm going to say about that.
What's the first question going to be, Mr. President? If you were the first question,
America Only News.
Right. That's Mr. calling on. Okay,
Mr. President,
right?
How can you look so good?
All right.
Never look better.
I'll be listening.
He lost weight.